the divine souls. At the end of the 11th chapter, Shri Krishna told Arjuna that the only way to receive his divine vision or to know him or to attain him in any way is through bhakti. In the 12th chapter, Arjuna begins by asking Shri Krishna a question about bhakti. Evam satata yuktaye bhaktastvam paryupasate ye chapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yoga vittama. Shri Krishna, there are two main ways of doing bhakti to you. One is by worshipping you in your formless aspect, and one is by worshipping you in your personal form as Krishna. Which bhakt is better? You see, in Ved, it also says, Dvevava brahmano rupe murtan chaiva murtan cha. God is only one, but he has two main aspects, murt and amurt. Murt means sakar, with form, and amurt means nirakar, without form. Therefore, there are two main kinds of bhakti. Because bhakti means surrendering to God. Whether someone wants to attain formless God, or whether someone wants to attain the personal form of God, both have to do bhakti. Whether someone wants liberation from Maya, or they want to know God, or they want to experience the bliss of God and enter into his divine abode and get his divine vision, all of these things require the grace of God, which is only attainable through self-surrender, not through any other means. So, there are two kinds of bhakti in the broadest sense. One is called abheda bhakti and one is called bheda bhakti. The one who worships formless God practices abheda bhakti. Abheda means no difference. And the one who worships the personal form of God practices bheda bhakti, which means a difference, like a duality. We call one a jnana yogi and one a bhakti yogi. Remember that in the Gita, the word yoga means to join your mind with God. And the word yogi means the one who is joining his mind with God, or the one who is surrendering to God. He is called a yogi. So there are two ways of surrendering to God. Surrendering to his personal form as Krishna, or thinking of him as formless God. Both are valid. Both are practical ways of doing bhakti, described in our scriptures. The jnana yogi worships formless God. So he's doing abheda bhakti. And the bhakti yogi, the one normally we just call a bhakt, a devotee, he's a devotee of the personal form of God. That's called bheda bhakti. Why bheda and abheda? Because the bhakt, the one who's worshipping Krishna in his personal form, he has a relationship with Shri Krishna. So to have a relationship, there has to be you and someone else, right? If you see the jnana yogi, he's thinking of just Krishna in his formless aspect. And he just thinks in his mind, this is his meditation, that my soul and Krishna are one. Krishna, it permeates all of this, but he's only thinking of him as formless. Krishna in his formless aspect permeates the whole universe. He permeates my own soul. There's no difference between me and him. So he's concentrating on the similarity between his soul and God. This is abheda bhakti. The jnana yogi does this. But how can he have a relationship with God? There's no relationship. If instead of two things, there's one, then how can you be related to anything else if you think of yourself as everything? The Gyani sees me, 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 me. Everywhere he looks, he thinks, oh, that's me, that's me, that's me, because I'm one with everything. So then he can't have a relationship. That's why it's called Abheda Bhakti. And the Bhakt, he has a relationship with God. I described those to you yesterday. Shant Bhav, Dasya Bhav, Sakya Bhav, Vatsalya Bhav, Madhurya Bhav. He has one of those five relationships with God. So to have a relationship, you have to have you and you have to have God. So that's a duality. So there's a difference. Is there a difference between soul and God? Yes, we talked about this in the 9th chapter. There's a great difference between soul and God. Yet there are also similarities. Both soul and God are divine. Both soul and God are chetan, or alive. But that's where the similarities end. Just these two things. Other than that, you can't compare a soul to God. Soul is infinitesimal and spot existent. God is unlimited and everywhere. He's omnipresent. God merely thinks and the universe comes into being. We think of many things that never come to fruition in our whole entire life. We dream big dreams that never happen. So in terms of power, you can't compare us to God. In terms of knowledge, again, you can't compare. God knows everything effortlessly without having to study or learn anything. He just knows. He knows every thought anyone ever has. But if I asked you to think back to 8 a.m. this morning and tell me, what were you thinking at 8 a.m., no one could do it. God could tell you, though. So He knows everything. We can't compare to Him in terms of knowledge, in terms of power, in terms of bliss. Again, God is ever blissful, perfectly blissful. And we, every once in a while, feel some fleeting happiness. But not even that is not true divine bliss. It's just temporary, limited material happiness. So there's a big difference between a soul and God. The Gyani is just focusing on those one or two points I told you which are similar between God and the soul. The fact that both God and soul are Sat-Chit-Anand. That's it. He just focuses on that. And the fact that God is permeating His own soul. So in that way, if He says, I am God, from that point of view, it's not wrong because God is totally permeating you from that perspective. But from another perspective, it's incorrect, because you are a soul and God is God. So this is Abheda Bhakti, if you try to think of God in this way. And then the Bhakt, who does Bheda Bhakti, he thinks of loving God and having a relationship with God. So Arjuna said, which one is better? Krishna said, both will come to me. Te prapnuvanti mameva. Both the one who practices bhed bhakti by worshipping me in my personal form and the one who practices abheda bhakti by worshipping my impersonal form, both will come to me. However,
Mayyavesya mano ye mam nitya yukta upasate shraddhaya bhajate yo mam same yukta tamamata.
The one who worships me in my personal form is better. A clear answer. Both will come to me. But the one who worships me in my personal form is better. I consider him to be the supreme yogi of all the yogis. Why? Well, for one thing, he says,
क्लेशोधिकतरस्तेषामव्यक्तासक्तचेतसाम् अव्यक्ता हि गतिर्दुःखम् देहवद्भिरवाप्यते.
The other way, Krishna says, worshipping me as formless is extremely difficult. He says, kleshah adhikatara means klesh, means difficulty, and adhikatar, extreme difficulty is involved in worshipping him as formless. Why? He says, anyone who has attachment in the world or in their body or to their own self-image, to their own name, that kind of thing, anyone who has any such attachment, he's unqualified to worship my formless aspect. Why? It's so abstract. You want to know the description of formless God in the Vedas?
Adrishtam avyavaharya magrahya malakshana machintya mavyapadeshya mekatma pratyayasaram prapanchopashamam shantam shivamadvaitam.
Mandukya Upanishad. He is adrishta, can't be seen. Avyavaharya, you can't relate to him in any way and he will not relate to you. Achintya, you can't think of it or imagine him. Avyapadeshya, he can't be described in any way. So he can't be described, can't be thought of, can't be seen, can't be related to. Alakshana, has no characteristics, no describable characteristics of any kind. Meaning you can't say, he's white, he's black, he's smooth, he's rough. Like no characteristics like that. So let's imagine there's a Guruji who's teaching devotion to or meditation on formless God. So you come and sit in front of your Guruji. Okay, Guruji, I'm ready to meditate on formless God, so please tell me what to do. Okay, there's God, we call Brahm, formless Brahm. Okay, so Brahm is his name? No. Brahm is not his name. Formless God has no name. We just say Brahm, but he has no name. Okay, no name. So, now what do I meditate on? Well, he has no form. No form, you mean like nothing? No, God is not nothing. Okay, then like space. No, space is just a material thing. God is not material. Okay, like blackness? No, not whiteness? No, both of those are material things. Guruji, what do I meditate on? How can... Kahat kathin, samujhat kathin, sadhan kathin viveka. Tulsidas ji says, describing it is difficult, understanding it is even more difficult, and practically following it is near impossible. The philosophy of jnana, this jnana marga as taught by Shankaracharya, is only to be adopted by someone who's already at a very high height spiritually. You know what the philosophy says, the way Shankaracharya explained it? That God is one, and souls are God. Those three tattva of the Vedas, he reduced to one. He said, Maya is just your imagination. So Maya's gone, it doesn't exist. And souls, well, they're just God. So souls don't exist either, only God exists. Then why are the souls so many? And why are the souls suffering in this world? Oh, because they've forgotten their God. Okay, so the souls are God, so it means God has forgotten he's God.
And God is imagining the existence of this world, and he himself is confused by his own imagination that this world actually exists when in fact it doesn't. Okay, this is the philosophy of Gyan in a nutshell as taught by Shankaracharya. Practically meditated upon by someone at the proper level, it works. It works. It's a path. As taught by Shankaracharya, if you're qualified to study that philosophy and meditate on this, you can use that to enter into samadhi and purify your heart. But for an ordinary person, it's far too difficult. The actual philosophy is that souls are eternally under the bondage of Maya. If God could get confused, ask yourself, about what did he get confused? When originally there was only God, then what did he get confused about? You get confused about something else, right? If you're walking in the dark and you see a coiled rope, you think, oh, it's a snake. Okay, you got confused about something else. You got confused about the rope. You thought it was a snake. Did you ever look at yourself and say, oh, a snake. Oh, no, it's just me. You don't get confused about yourself, right? So when in the beginning God was alone, then he got confused about what? He got confused about himself. And for God himself, and so that's why there are souls. So there are many discrepancies in this Advaita theory as propagated by Shankaracharya. This is not in any way a negative comment against Shankaracharya. He was a saint, not just a saint, he was a dissension of God Shiva. And he had his own instructions from Krishna why he should come and preach this way. And it was part of an overall master plan, you can say, which the other Jagat Gurus who were to follow him were also a part of. But from our practical point of view, this philosophy of Advaita is not practical for us to follow. If someone were qualified, meaning totally renounced from the world, then they could study this philosophy of Advaita and try to worship formless God. But to really, even Shankaracharya says, Adau nitya nitya vastu viveka pariganyate. First, you have to be renounced from the world. Then come and listen to this philosophy. Before you're even qualified to hear Atato Brahma Jigyasa, the first sutra of the Brahma Sutra, before you're even qualified to hear that on the path of Gyan, totally renounce everything. Not just physically, from inside. An example of such renunciation was King Janak. King Janak used to come to the ashram of his Guruji, who was in the jungle, in a simple ashram, and he had many other shishyas as well. So these young disciples of Guruji used to see that whenever King Janak would come, Guruji would seat him right in the front. So the younger disciples would think that, oh, probably, you know, because the king is so wealthy and so powerful, so Guruji feels he has to show him some respect. That's why he makes him sit in the front. But they kind of had that pride that, well, we're all brahmacharis. We're all, you know, we're totally renounced. We must be more renounced than King Janak. But okay, he sits in the front because, you know, he bade aadmi hai. Achha, theek hai. So Guruji knew what they were thinking. He decided to demonstrate to them the inner difference between King Janak and all of them. Using his Yogamaya Shakti, Guruji set fire to Mithila, the city of King Janak. So while they were sitting and Guruji was teaching them Vedas, some servants from the city came rushing on horseback and interrupted, came running in. Oh, king, the city's on fire. Yes, it's fine. I'll deal with that later. Guruji, please, what's the next mantra? So they go back. And then again, they come racing back. Guruji, your whole family is caught in the blaze. Everything is burning. Yes. I'll deal with that when I'm done here. Guruji, what's the next mantra? Meanwhile, Guruji sets the outside of the ashram on fire using his Yogamaya Shakti. All the shishyas, all the disciples, what do they have? They just have like a langoti, one or two each, just one to wear and one to wash and hang up to dry. So they have, probably the one to dry is out there hanging. They all jump up and run to go grab it. And King Janak keeps sitting. So then Guruji made all the flames disappear. Because Yogamaya has the power to make something appear that it's there when in fact it isn't. So neither was Mithila burning nor was the ashram burning. But then all the disciples saw, oh, we were running for our one little langoti and King Janak was letting his whole entire kingdom burn and he never wavered for a second. That's the kind of renunciation required to embark upon the path of gyan or the path of abhed bhakti. It's a very demanding and very abstract way to meditate. It's not for an ordinary person. For us, it's much easier simply to think of Krishna in his loving personal form. Ye tu karmani sarvani mayi sanyasya matpara. He says, you just think of me in my personal form, Arjun. It's so much easier. Ananye naiva yogena mam dhyayanta upasate. Then, te shamaham samuddharta mrityu sansara sagarat bhavami nachirat partha mayyaveshita chetasam. You easily and quickly cross over this ocean of maya with my grace. Another big difference. I talked about the difference in meditation, that one is easy and one is difficult. Thinking of Krishna in his personal form, what's hard about that? We all have seen pictures which are based on the descriptions of saints, paintings based on the descriptions of saints who have seen Krishna. Based on that, we form an image in our mind. And as I mentioned in previous classes, that image, although we're not really having the divine vision of Krishna, whatever is his divine form, we'll see when we become God-realized. So one would wonder, then what's the value of that meditation? Whatever is his divine form, you can't think of that with your material mind. But because you're thinking of Krishna or you have the intention of thinking of Krishna, he graces you as if you were thinking of his actual divine form. That's why it's so easy. There's no right or wrong as long as your intention is there. Then you can add in thinking of any of his leelas, thinking of him in any form you want, doing anything you want. This makes it very easy to meditate, and it actually goes with the nature of the mind. Because the nature of the mind is to desire beauty, for one. So what's more beautiful than the form of Krishna? We desire variety. So there's a great variety of Krishna's leelas. There's endless. Hari ananta, hari katha ananta. There's no limit to Krishna's leelas. Even your desires can be funneled towards Krishna. You have the desire to see something beautiful. Okay, close your eyes and think of Krishna's beauty. You have the desire to smell something nice. Close your eyes and think of the fragrance of Krishna's banamala, his mala made of the fragrant flowers of the jungle. Or think of the fragrance of the oils that he wears in his hair, something like that. You have a desire to hear something pleasing to your ear. So think of how pleasing Krishna's voice must be if he's talking or singing, or the sound of his flute, or the sound of his anklets as he walks. All the same desires we have in this world. In other words, five kinds of desires, because we have five senses. Desire to see, hear, taste, touch, and smell something to make us happy. Divert all of those desires towards Krishna and imagine meeting him in that way. You're doing bhakti. This is meditation on the path of bhakti. What could be more natural for our mind? This is what we do all the time, all day long. We do this kind of chintan about getting to meet with the people or the things that we desire. So just channel those desires towards Krishna. And that is bhakti, that is meditation for bheda bhakti, towards the personal form of God. But the impersonal form of God, what do you have to do? First, stop the flow of the mind. See, when you're worshipping Krishna in his personal form, you don't stop the flow of the mind, you just divert it towards him. You have desires? Okay, desire Krishna. You want to see something beautiful? Okay, think of Krishna. So the flow of the mind is naturally to desire things. On the path of jnana, you have to stop that flow. Normally the flow of desires is towards the world. So you're merely diverting it towards Krishna on the path of bheda bhakti. But when you're doing abheda bhakti, you're trying to think of formless God, the first thing you do is stop the desires. You're saying, oh my mind, stop desiring the world. That's it. There's no happiness in the world, but that you're not saying the opposite. See, in one case you're saying, there's no true happiness in the world, but true happiness is in Krishna. So the mind says, oh, okay, I'll go over there. Here you're just saying, mind, there's no happiness in the world. That's it. Because the goal of the jnani is not to experience God. He wants liberation. That's it. The goal of the jnani is moksha, and to merge into formless God. So to get there, he has to purify his heart and become fully surrendered to God. And the process of doing that for him is meditating on formless God. And that purifies his heart. But he's not saying God is happiness. He's not thinking about that if I get God, I'll be happy. He's thinking about, if I get free from this world, I'll stop suffering. That's what he's thinking of. I want to be free from this world. So, oh my mind, stop desiring the world. There's no happiness in the world. Stop. And we'll just meditate on formless God, and when we become fully surrendered to Krishna in that way, he'll grace us and we'll get liberation. And we'll never have to suffer in this world again. It goes against the flow of the mind. Instead of diverting the desires, you're just blocking it. That's why it's so difficult. Who's qualified to do that? None of us wants to give up our desires. In case you're thinking, oh no, I might. Okay, if you were sitting in that ashram with those disciples, would you have been sitting there next to King Janak, or would you have been jumping up to grab your langoti? We all would have been jumping up. So luckily for us, there's the path of devotion to the personal form of God. We're all qualified for it. No matter how much worldly attachment we have, no matter how many desires we have, we can learn to divert those towards Shri Krishna. And secondly, even if someone is qualified to follow the path of jnana, it's still difficult to do because he's doing so without the protection of the grace of Shri Krishna. because he's worshipping Krishna in his formless aspect, and the impersonal God, Nirakar Brahm, almost all of his powers are dormant, including the power of grace. So it means formless God does not grace his devotees. How can he? He's inactive himself. He doesn't have ears. How can he hear his devotee call? Right? He has no form. He doesn't talk. He doesn't hear. His mind is inactive. Everything is inactive. So he doesn't grace. It means the jnani who's worshipping formless God, he's progressing very tenuous. His progression is very tenuous. It means he could fall at any time. If his mind diverts back into the world, he can just fall. Start desiring the world again. Whereas the bhakt, first of all, he may have been less qualified than the jnani to start with, yet from the moment he starts receiving Krishna's grace because he's worshipping Krishna in his personal form, and his personal form is the active form of all of his powers. So he's actively gracing anyone who surrenders to him. So if his mind diverts from the path, Krishna is still inside holding him. He says, okay, your mind is wavering, but you're still with me. Meaning, let's say a devotee, he still wants to worship Krishna, but his mind, maybe he's having a bad sanskar, his mind is more drawn towards the world. Krishna protects what he has gained so far on the path. This is yoga kshem vaham myaham. He protects what he's gained, and he ensures his further progress. When that bad sanskar passes, he again continues his progress on the path. This is why he says, Chipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat chantim nigacchati kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. My bhakt can never fall from the path. If he's sincere, even if he has bad days, I keep him on the path. He graces his devotees to be able to keep following the path of devotion. The jnani has no such protection. That's why it's said that a jnani is more like a bandar ka bachcha. And a bhakt is more like billi ka bachcha. Yeah, bandar, the monkey, has to hold on to his mother from underneath or from on top. One way or another, he's trying to hold on to his mother, and the mother's jumping from tree to tree. And if he lets go, he falls, even if he lets go for a second. But the billi, the cat, just grabs her kitten in her mouth. The kitten just is along for the ride, getting carried. So that Krishna's got you if you're worshipping him in his personal form. But if you're worshipping his impersonal aspect, he's silent. So this is a second drawback. First drawback, the qualification to begin the path of jnana is very high. Second drawback, if you qualify, you don't have Krishna's protection to keep you from falling off the path. Third drawback, it's very, very long. You have to follow this path of abhed bhakti for many, many lifetimes to fully purify your heart. Whereas the path of bhed bhakti, when you're worshipping his personal form, because you're receiving his grace, your heart is actually purifying much more quickly. So you could succeed in one lifetime, one single lifetime. So imagine the jnani is working so much harder and getting less results. The bhakt is less qualified. The effort he has to put in is not as strenuous, and he's getting more results. His meditation is more easy. The jnani's meditation is much more difficult. And in the end, let's say we go to the very end, both the bhakt and the jnani, they've fully purified their heart through their practices. The jnani by his samadhi of meditating on formless God, and the bhakt by shedding tears and chanting God's name and meditating on his personal form. He also purified his heart 100%. Now what happens? Well, the bhakt is already surrendered to Krishna in his personal form. So instantly, he gets freed from Maya and he gets the divine vision of God. And according to which relationship he had established with God, he enters the divine abode and he gets to continue experiencing the divine bliss and that divine relationship with God forever. The jnani, at that point, what does he have to do? Up until now, he's been worshipping Krishna in his impersonal form. Now he has to surrender to Krishna in his personal form. Why? Because he still needs his grace to get free from Maya. He's fully purified his heart, but he's still not free from Maya. So even in the end, the jnani has to turn to the personal form of God. And after all of that, you would think, okay, now they must be equal, right? The jnani and the bhakt, after they've both surrendered to Krishna, after doing all of that to purify their heart, now they must be on equal ground, right? Again, the answer is no. The evidence comes from those jnanis who, before they left their body, see, let's say a jnani becomes surrendered to Krishna and becomes liberated at age 40. But he was destined to live in this physical body until age 60, then he has to stay on the earth for another 20 years. Now, during those 20 years, he's totally absorbed in the bliss of formless God at this time. Once he leaves his physical body, his material mind also stays there. Even though he's technically liberated, he's jivanamukt. He still has his mayic body, and he still has he has a mayic mind. Just the sattvic quality of the mayic mind remains for him. It's not going to stay for long. When he leaves his body and mind will go back into Maya and just his soul goes into God. But as long as he's here, on the basis of his totally pure material mind, he experiences the total oneness between himself and God, and he experiences the bliss of formless God. Satchidanand Nirakar Brahm. He enjoys the bliss of Brahmanand, which is unlimited. Once he leaves his body and merges into formless God, his experience finishes because his mind also finishes. It was mayic, he had to leave it behind. So during that short window of time while he's still on the earth, he's actually experiencing the bliss of formless God, which is unlimited. But we have so many examples in our history of such saints who, while they were wandering around on this earth planet enjoying the bliss of formless God, they got a chance to enjoy the bliss of the personal form of God, and they abandoned the bliss of formless God. One example is King Janak. He was called Videha because he was so absorbed in that bliss of formless God all the time, he had no body consciousness. He was just completely absorbed. Now, when Vishwamitra brought Bhagwan Ram and Lakshman to Mithila for the first time, and King Janak saw Ram standing there in front of him, imagine the same God he was experiencing as a formless divine existence is now standing before him in a beautiful form. He says, In hi vilokat ati anuraga barbas brahma sukhahi man tyaga. Seeing them, my mind is completely infatuated with their divine beauty, and it has renounced, not even renounced, barbas. It means he didn't even have to think about it. Like, oh, but I have the bliss of formless God, and now I have this divine beauty in a personal form in front. He didn't even think about it. Barabas, it means his mind was forcefully attracted to Ram. He didn't even have a choice. And that experience of formless bliss was gone forever, and now he was drowned in the bliss of the personal form of God. It shows that that's higher. Sanakadik Paramahans are another famous example. There are also four Jnani saints. Janma Jat Jnani Paramahans. From the time they're born, they're Jnani saints. Paramahans means absorbed in the bliss of formless God. They one time went to Vaikunth abode. They could go anywhere they want. So they entered Mahavishnu's abode. And there, before they even got the vision of Vishnu, just the fragrance of the breeze which was blowing and came across the charan of Mahavishnu where a tulsi flower had been offered, and all that fragrance was carried and entered their nostril, because formless God has no fragrance, no form, no fragrance, no touch. So the fragrance entered their nostril, and sang Chobhamaksharajushamapi chitta tanvo bhagavatam. Their bliss of formless God was revoked, and their mind was excited, and they went to Vishnu and they said, Kamam bhava svavrijinair niraye shunasya cheto livad yadinute padayorameta vachaschanas tulasi vadyaditengrishobha puryetate gunaganas yadi pankajashri bhagavatam. They said, Oh my Lord, we'd be fine if you give us a birth in Narak, in hell. What are you asking for? Oh yeah, but on this condition, we'll be fine if you give us birth in Narak, if while we're there, our mind always stays attached to your lotus feet. So imagine, Jnani Paramahans, who are already experiencing the bliss of formless God, and they're saying, if we can just get to keep experiencing the bliss of your personal form, we'll be happy, you can happily send us to Narak. So there's a big difference. There are dozens of examples from our history. I don't have time to go into any more detail tonight. But my point is that although Krishna says, Te prapnuvanti mameva, the one who worships me in my impersonal form and the one who worships me in my personal form both come to me. Although he says that, but there's still a big difference in the difficulty of those paths, one being easy and one being difficult. And in the end, the attainment is also different. The jnani only attains formless God, whereas the bhakt attains the ultimate experience of meeting God in his personal form and getting to experience the divine bliss with all five of his divine senses forever. And that bliss goes on multiplying every moment forever. So this, in gist, is the philosophy of the 12th chapter of the Gita, where Krishna also tells Arjun, Mayi eva mana adhatsva mayi buddhin niveshaya nivasishyasi mayi eva ata urdhvam na sanshaya. So Arjun, you just think of me in my personal form as Krishna, and then there's no doubt you will come to me. So with these words, I finish my explanation of the 12th chapter. And when I return, we've set the date actually for the next, the final part, chapters 13 to 18, we'll be doing July 14th to the 19th here at the Sai Baba Mandir in Flushing.